Mecca Lecca High, Mecca Honey Ho. Mecca Lecca High, Mecca Honey Ho.
Okay, we hoed.
Welcome to This Week in Mormons and Pee Wee's Playhouse, everybody. We're happy to be here with you this
really
week.
Really excited to be here. Mormon news. Thank you, everybody.
And the shoes. Al is thrilled to be here. Al is thrilled to be here because he's arguably in my favorite metropolitan area of the United States.
Seattle is lovely. I am up in Seattle today. I had lunch at the Microsoft campus.
Oh.
This was interesting because when I was just a youth, I remember reading some article about some kid getting recruited to Microsoft, and he wrote about it, and he said, I went there and we got in vans to go around the campus, and there were free Snickers bars in the armrest, free Snickers everywhere, and you could just eat whatever you wanted. There was sodas and candy, free. Well, the world has since changed, right? Now you go to Google and you're disappointed if you don't get like a free suit as you walk out of there. but at the time, this was a big deal for Microsoft. So I always had this illusion that it was going to be this big magical place. So I had a friend that worked there. He invited me to lunch. I suggested we meet at the Microsoft campus. We did. It was very fun to see old friends from college, but then to be at Microsoft in the belly of the beast, if you will.
Yeah, that's cool, man.
They charge more for their food there than anywhere else I would go. Like, I paid like $12
for free food at Microsoft.
You know, lunch? No, they had this whole sort of employee food court, but you have to pay for everything. And I was like,
what's
was
that
like,
all
what
about?
Is this?
They need to get the spirit of Silicon Valley. I mean, you've got Microsoft
really
charging for food. Apparently,
just because we're in Redmond.
Apparently, no. Amazon is the worst place to work. Terrible.
Yeah. Well, that's just because they overwork and.
And Nordstrom is from Seattle, so all bad things.
I was in San Francisco a couple of weeks ago, and went and visited some prominent facility down there, and they have like an open lunch policy. Anybody from the street can even come in and eat their free lunch. It's just like, yeah, we have a cafeteria going. You're welcome to come and participate. Please stop by. We got
sorry, that makes it sound like a cult. Like, you're welcome to come and participate. Come.
Yeah, come join the family.
Come participate.
No, when like, so you go from that to waving your badge to get in the door and then having to pay an overpriced. It was great though because I got to live out my little 15-year-old
fantasy. Was the food even good? I mean, it was overpriced, but was it
yeah.
Classic cafeteria nonsense? Like
classic cafeteria.
Like a step
food.
Up from hospital food, if that.
Oh, yeah. That's the one.
I ate a lot of hospital food when we had the baby. I grew to like that cafeteria. It became an exciting place for me.
That's the one thing you have to look forward to all day. You're going to sit in a dark room, and then you get the chance to go eat food.
Yep.
Jell-O.
That about sums up. Plus, the baby, who's cute.
Oh, you did have a baby. How's the dad thing? Are you still doing that?
I love that every week all you ask me is, how is the dad thing? Are you still doing that?
Well, Jeff, if it changes, I want to be the first to know.
The dad thing is great, and yes. It's still going on. I intend to see this one through, all right? I am going to do these Hail Mary BYU passes. I don't need those. I will be just steadily running it up in one-yard increments. Well, not one-yard increments. Enough to get a first down. I don't know where I'm going with this metaphor. Enough to carry the ball all the way down.
Go 3.5 yards every play.
Exactly. 3.5 yards.
The BYU stuff is has been a little crazy, and it's been bizarre that I've watched both games. I never I watched zero BYU games ever, and I've been watching every game that this has happened, and it's been quite the exciting finish, no matter what. I've been very impressed. Way to go, BYU. Way to go, Tanner Mangum, and there's no way that this continues.
Wouldn't
just
it be funny if
happening.
It did? If their whole season was just a series of miracle games?
Like, there's no way they're going to win it. They throw this crazy
They would
pass
be like the Royals last year. You know, it would just be America's team. And
oh
America's
Remember
choir
in the,
will sing at America's
in
team.
In, like, the ninth inning or the eighth inning against the A's in that wild card game, and they come back and win it. Go Royals.
See,
Take
this
crown.
Year's this
crown.
Year is not as exciting with the it's exciting because they're playing well, but last year was such a fairy tale with how they got to the World Series. This year they've just been really good and they've been ahead in the division the whole time, so it's less.
Well, it's for us it's just
still
that
very,
momentum
it's,
is carrying
it's still
in.
Very,
yeah,
it's still
no,
very fun.
It keeps
unlike
going.
My poor Angels who are pathetic. And very frustrating to watch.
They are. But they're nice guys.
By the way, everybody, we know we've had some technical difficulties the past couple of weeks. So
That's on me.
We're trying to figure these things out. Not a lot of clear cut answers, but so we're hoping there's no no crackling.
We have changed every setting now, and hopefully this fixes.
All
everything.
Al has done is downgrade the quality of his recording from 24 to 16 bits. That's what he has done so far. Maybe it'll make a difference.
You're welcome, America. You're welcome.
Maybe last week you were running too much. Were you running some kind of a backup or a thing in the background?
Oh my gosh, Jeff. I own the most powerful computer on the market.
Are you serious?
I can run.
You own a computer that runs a Xeon processor? That's impressive.
Yeah, and it's zettaflops of space
really?
In there. Yeah.
Of RAM.
I believe that's after petaflops. It's true. Anyway, Jeff, that was a very nerdy moment for me.
That's delightful. Well, no. Embrace the nerd, man. Just
wait. So have you been traveling? Where are you at?
Why would I travel? No, I'm still in Washington D.C. It's the place to be. It's very fun. Since we last spoke, what has happened? I feel like I did something, but I don't recall. I don't recall. I'm just so happily hanging out with my little dude that it doesn't matter, man.
You're
missing out,
that.
Buddy. You know, you're missing out. I'm trying to.
I was talking to a friend the other day about the just how, like, even when you plan stuff to do, like you and I could plan something to do, but it would be the first thing to go if something else came up, just because we're buddies. We already, you know, we've got our good connection. But like, if we had, you know, if somebody was like, oh well, we're gonna do this instead, it's like, well, guess what? The canoe trip is off. We're not gonna do it anymore. He said, here's the key, man. You got to have traditions, because when you have traditions, the wife, the kids, the everybody is okay with it.
So
Jeff, we need a tradition.
Should make Cedar Point an actual tradition every year that we have to do.
Or a new roller coaster theme
every
park.
Year, a new park.
Every year.
I've still never been to Hershey Park. I would love to hit that up. That'd be exciting.
I'll come. I'm coming now. Is it still open? When is it closed?
I don't know. Should we look up the hours right now as we speak? Make sure to tell our listeners the hours for Hershey Park.
Yeah, meet us at Hershey Park. What's at Hershey Park?
It's a combination of a celebration of chocolate from the Hershey Chocolate Company slash roller coasters. It's a chocolate roller coaster.
Let's get so sugared up that we throw up and then actually throw up.
That is the dream. That's my plan. And Harrisburg. It's like an hour and 45 minutes away. Not very far. Not too bad.
All right. Here's the deal, Jeff. I'm out there the middle of next month. I think I messaged you about this. I'm staying on your floor. I say we take that day off.
We need
of work.
To talk about the staying on the floor thing. That might have changed. We're going to have to talk about your original offer on that one, but we can talk offline. About some.
No, remember, I was like, hey, I get a hotel. Where should I go? And you said, it's not a thing. You stay with me. When you come to my town, Papa Jeff takes care of you. You know we got this. I just had in-laws in town. They were here. You are tighter than them. Come to me, Al. And I said, Jeff, that is beyond generous. Thank you so much. And now you're saying that conversation
we can iron
changed.
Out the details and figure out the exact what we should expect from this experience. I'm delighted that you'll be here. It'll be great.
Buster, you can't stay on the balcony,
buddy. No, it's not Buster.
Buddy.
It's when... It's when Michael promises his kids they're going to go fishing. Sorry. Something came up.
All right.
Anyway, that's fine. My mom's actually in town, so that's right now, so that's fun too. She's on a business trip, so we've been hanging out. And tonight, assuming we get through this, we intend to watch the Republican debate, because Republicans and Mormons are the same thing. I conflate the two, according to that's what I do.
That's
and that's true. I mean, if I see a Republican, I assume that person has a testimony of the restored gospel of Jesus Christ.
Marco Rubio?
No, he doesn't have a testimony. He actually got rid of his testimony and became a test. He likes Catholicism more. That's a bold.
That's more
a
popular.
Bold move. I don't know many people who are Mormons who then become Catholics. The other way around, sure.
Yeah, it's like, hey, thanks for giving me all the answers to life. I'm going to go back to a lot more questions.
I'm not going to knock it. Anybody in that sense, but it's a rarity. You don't see that as much. Sort of the legacy faiths, maybe we would call them, like people don't usually go.
Well,
to
no,
them.
I'm not.
They usually just get born into them. Not a lot of people convert to Catholicism. People do convert to Catholicism. Plenty do, especially in like the UK, and it happens.
But so much of Mormon theology is hey.
That's exactly how the discussions start. The first discussion.
That's what I do. I say, whoa, hey. Once there was a prophet. Once there was a prophet. Tall. No, but you're talking about the apostasy. You're talking about the priesthood not existing, that chain anymore on the earth, and you the need for the restoration, and then to go from that sort of understanding to, hey, Catholicism. I feel like is a random move. Yeah.
It's pretty strong. Let's not pretend. It's really strong. So, and to reference what we're talking about, by the way, Marco Rubio, in case you don't know, you know, he's running for president, senator from Florida, spent time in Las Vegas as a child, where he actually became a Latter-day Saint, left the faith in his teenage years, and went to Catholicism. And he has been in Nevada campaigning because they have one of the earlier primaries there. And some might argue that he is pandering to the Mormon folk because he's sort of trying to allude to his Mormon experience, talking about what things that it meant to him, how it sort of informed his view and how grateful he was for it, without completely leaning on it and saying
his campaign slogan is CTR, choose the Rubio. We feel like it's just sort of some gratuitous nods to things that maybe he hasn't earned the right.
Exactly. Has he earned the right? I don't even know. So that's been happening, and I think some people you could take it one way or the other. I don't know. I mean, I just feel like if I were LDS and this guy comes into town and kind of tries to remind me that he was Mormon.
I feel like this is a smart move, though, man, because he's got a very gracious sort of approach to it. He's like, oh, it was a good thing for our family at the time. I mean, then we left, and now we got this thing. Like he's sort of owning up to that, and then which Mormons, I mean, we're built to be pandered to. Look at this MLM stuff. I mean, we love to be told how great we are, and that you were once one of us. I actually think that's a viable strategy. Good for
Will it work, though? Will it tip Nevada in his favor?
No, I actually have no idea who all the candidates are in the Republican field right now because they're so random. There's one less
now than there used to be because Rick Perry dropped out. So,
did you hear about that? And the guy wanting to get his the super donor wanting his $5 million.
I didn't see that.
Back.
That's pretty funny. Oh, I see that right. I see that right now. Like, hey, because I opened up the Rubio article.
If you're not going to run for president, I'd like that money back.
It's fair. So Rubio could still be our first Mormon president. I feel like his campaign doesn't have a lot of momentum right now. All that could change tonight when he takes on Trump. And he and Donald Trump talk about home teaching. It's going to be very exciting.
Go Mormons.
I'm grateful to have been here.
Yeah, choose Trump.
Choose the Trump.
But everything else, Jeff, we've talked through.
What? Do you have things you want to talk? We can talk about personal issues if you want.
No, we were just talking life.
Yeah, yeah.
And love and passion.
That's something that happens.
It's sunny in Seattle, though. I feel like I made the right choice to be here. Anyway.
Congratulations.
Let's talk for a minute. Speaking of BYU wins and all of that, yada yada, there is a football announcer guy who called Mormons thug Mormons. He said, "You BYU kids, you are thug Mormons. You may be Mormons, but you are rough and tumble."
That's what I think of when I think of BYU players. Just these ragamuffins hitting.
No, did you not see who was the guy?
One of the guys
tackled.
Punched a guy in the
ball goes loose. He grabs the ball and he punches him right in the hoo-ha, if you will. Right in the old moneymaker. And I mean, that's very thug Mormon. Well done, you.
This is who we are now.
Punk.
I like this idea though. If it were like,
this has always been BYU though. BYU plays notoriously dirty, and people that play against them, I mean, they're spitting and
is that really a thing? BYU plays notoriously
swearing.
Dirty?
Yeah, that absolutely is. It absolutely is.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We had some listeners last week decry our ill-informed approach to BYU athletics and understanding it. So I will up front tell you.
What did they say?
I can find it. I will up front tell you I know nothing about BYU athletics.
I know quite a bit.
I don't care.
I follow it closely.
I'm supportive of my community. I will say this, though.
I like to mock BYU athletics.
I went to BYU. I'm a Cougar. I went there, right? But I just don't care very much. And it's not awkward for me, but I worry how it could be for a lot of people because talking about BYU football in particular, and then the basketball season too, but especially the football season, is sort of like a de facto approved topic of conversation at church the day after a game. And it's always discussed as if everyone knows what's going on. And of course we all care. And of course we all root for the Cougars. And it's just like, it's like the stuff that almost comes from the pulpit, you know?
Oh, you know?
And you sit there and think, is this really appropriate? I appreciate that, but not everyone went to BYU, and not everyone cares about BYU.
You know what the best was the day after. So they played Boise State University this last week. And I was driving to Seattle, so we stopped the night in Boise Saturday
goodness.
Night. And I attended church
How
in Boise. At a singles ward in Boise State, because it was at 10 a.m., which was perfect for me. It was a very sober mood, like noticeably quieter. And I was like, oh boy, this is icy up here, you guys. But yeah, that was kind of a laugh for
it's
me.
Pretty funny.
Just being there of all places the morning after. It was very Mormon area. A lot of Mormons there doing their thing, but then to be jacked by BYU on that last second play and the punch in the nuts. You're not loving BYU at that point.
Nope, I'm not. So apparently they are thugs. We are hardcore. We walk the mean streets of Provo with an attitude, ready to take people on.
Well, so this is a joke, right? Somebody says this about Mormons, and they start tweeting about it. They say, look, I'm a thug Mormon. I only home teach every other month. Or look, it's me, the thug Mormon. I'm drinking Coke. You know, sort of goofy stuff talking about.
Look how edgy and prostate I am.
Well, somebody, LaShawn Schultz, who does not get the joke, has an article on Rational Faiths. He says, what is this, some kind of joke? Yes, it is. It is a joke. Virtuous, lovely, good report, praiseworthy. This is what you're seeking after, thug Mormons? Well, I mean, I think maybe good report, praiseworthy maybe. There's elements of this there. It's more the joke. So this guy, person, I don't not exactly sure who LaShawn is, but he's
it's
very angry about this. And she LaShawn. Oh, there she is. Whoa, she is. Yeah, she is livid about this joke that she is not in on. So she should be in on it. Tell her.
But I can appreciate it because, and to be clear, I think there's a little bit here. The author LaShawn is African American, and I think she's arguing that, like, dude, you're a bunch of white people trying to act like you're all street savvy, being thugs, like it's funny.
To be fair, these are mainly Polynesian players.
They can be
on the
thugs
football
if they
team,
want.
So
it's true. But I really want to see, like, you know what I'm talking about.
Also, being black does not make you
no,
a thug.
No.
Being white,
she
does
not say white people cannot
non-thug.
Be thugs. I disagree. I have seen Macklemore. I believe he can be a thug.
No, Macklemore, very
forward-thinking.
Eminem
not be a
thug?
What about the old group House of Pain? Thug-esque, no? I feel that the white people can be thugs, if needs be.
That the white people.
I feel that my race has the potential to be thuggy.
I feel like how you treat other people has more to do with your thuggish status than... Yes,
no
Jeff.
Oh, my God.
Yes, I am.
Well, okay. Hey, anyway, have you seen this...
I feel like we're reading an article based on an Onion article where they're just like, I can't believe that Obama would send all of Oklahoma to the moon.
Of course.
Like, no, he didn't do that.
Al, have you seen this weird stuff that's been going around in the past week or so, in particular from this sister, Julie Rowe, who built a book called A Greater Tomorrow, My Journey Beyond the Veil.
She built it and she wrote it, both by her.
And Al, it's apparently there's this whole, like, apocalypse prediction thing going on right now. Apparently, according to many Mormons, like, it's all going down within the next week and a half. Or so, I would guess. And it's like the time is now. It's happening.
Well, that's unfortunate. I have plane tickets in October.
So I'm
to be me.
Fascinated by this.
This is interesting because this flares up every now and then. There's a sense in our church to just want the world to end, I think.
Yeah, no, there is. I think there's this... Yeah, interesting balance there, where I think we look forward to the second coming. We look forward to Christ's reign, all these great things. But sometimes it's kind of weird the way we can lean on it. Yeah.
This is so dumb, though, because I like adamantly our leaders have said, no man knoweth, right? No man knoweth. Even counts for like a couple of weeks' notice. Nobody knows, people.
But
nobody knows. Starting September 13th,
but Julie Rowe does know. I need to read to you the synopsis of her book. It's a few paragraphs long, but this is mind-blowing. So in 2004, she was a happy wife and mother. Then her health took a turn for the worse. While in a weakened state, her spirit left her body and entered the spirit world. An ancestor named John, very, very original name, greeted her and showed her many wonderful places there. He also allowed her to read from the Book of Life, which showed her a panorama of the Earth's past, present, and future. She saw the lives of many
How did it look?
There were more Chick-fil-A's per capita than McDonald's. That's the great little thing we have to look forward to. So she saw the lives of many historical figures, Adam and Eve, Enoch, Noah, and Moses. She witnessed the Savior's mortal life, including his crucifixion and resurrection. She also saw the restoration of the church through the prophet Joseph Smith. Now, she was also shown upcoming world events that will be both tragic and glorious. She saw earthquakes, tsunamis, famines, plagues, and wars. But she also witnessed how the Lord is watching over his people and is preparing a place of refuge to protect them from the coming calamities. She was filled with joy as she saw the saints establish the New Jerusalem and other cities of light in preparation for the Savior's second coming. Prior to her return, she was told that at a future time, she would be expected to tell others about her experience. That time has come. And this is why we have the book. And we have to have her on the show.
Jeff, we're so...
We would be terrible.
Here's the thing. I feel like guests on the show we're good at. Having people on the show to interview, we're really bad at, because we can never decide if we want to make fun of them or be on their side. And again, I feel like most of them, I want to let them in on the joke, but it doesn't make sense. And then it ends up being this awkward, like, I'm being a little bit snarky and then just nice, and then you're being nice and interviewing.
So in
like
the future, we should just be
good.
Mean.
So if we had her on the show, I would want to sort of make fun of her, but this is a very serious thing for her. I'm sure she's written this.
I'm sure she's
feeling,
very sincere
about
it
about.
Too. And I don't even take away from this the fact that somebody could potentially have crazy experiences, because what we call crazy experiences are very similar in nature to things that happened during the restoration of the gospel or in the scriptures and stuff like that. I do think
or even now,
we can have
yeah,
experiences.
People
of
have
course,
revelations.
For the
sure.
church is reserved for particular circumstances, but.
Well, the difference, again, we've seen this before, but it's trying to amass a following, right? I mean, this is fine if you want to write and just be like, hey, this is a thing, but she has, like, healings that she conducts and weird sort of shady stuff like that that's a little bit more come follow me and donate to my cause or buy healings from me sort of thing that puts her in an odd category of not checking out so far as Mormon people go, right? She is not functioning the way that like people that just want to warn and share would function. And so,
but
buyer beware.
That's all I'm saying.
It's
interesting though, because there's a whole culture around this though, even outside of her, where everyone thinks that because of all these various prophecies and things that are brought up here that it's all going down. Apparently, all the emergency preparedness stores in Utah have been selling out of materials.
Well, we should be thinking that.
Sure.
We should be preparing. We should
sure.
be always prepared. Two, you know, this isn't as an excuse to go nuts on this stuff. People, what are you thinking?
Now, did you see she was also added to a letter to CES, you know, institutes and of religion and seminaries. She was added. Her book was added to the list of spurious materials, as they call them, a regular ongoing list they have of stuff that is not to be cited or recommended to students. Included in it, her book, some quote attributed to President Hinckley, missionaries being called to China. These go back a ways, though. Increased persecution to the church if Mitt Romney wins the Republican nomination, which, of course, did happen. It was great. There's a lot of funny stuff about here like that. The rumor, Mormon Tabernacle Choir's tour of England being canceled. Utah National Guard in Iraq. Anyway, baseless stuff that the church is going out of its way to say, read Julie's book if you want. But I even saw, I think Peggy Fletcher Stack made mention that I think it was think it was President Packer back in the day, made pretty clear reference in a conference talk that basically said, you don't have anything to worry about. You can live a fruitful life and have grandchildren, maybe even great-grandchildren. So what that means is our great-grandchildren are in trouble, or the grandchildren. So,
well, none of us are in trouble, right? I mean, the idea is that we live the best life we can, and by so doing,
I'll be honest on this show, like, I have a testimony. I love the gospel. I'm so grateful for it. I'm grateful for the church, and I'm grateful for my chances to serve. I love so many things. And yet, in some ways, like, I kind of fear, like, the great and dreadful day. You know, even though I'm living my life in such a way where I should be confident that all is going to be well, but part of me is, like, freaked out about it. I always have been that way. I don't know why.
It might be your unrepentant sins,
sure, it
Jeff.
Could be that.
I mean, it's likely that brothel you ran
well, yeah,
college.
But if the brothel's legal, then we get into a whole thing about, you know, law of the land.
You paid tithing on it, so I think you're fine.
I don't know. It's always been a thing that's kind of made me like it's a great thing to look forward to because it's wonderful, but at the same time, I guess, like, part of me is still scared for all that going down. I don't know.
It's always a little bit fantastical to me, you know, to think, well, because so much of what I spend my time doing is sort of reasoning my faith into something that is digestible for me, right? Like I, you know, I believe in revelation and in praying and getting answers, but to believe in, like, the rapture sort of stuff is a little bit that's a lot to swallow for me every day. And so I kind of go the other way where I'm like, whew, man, well, I don't know how this will look when it happens.
It's got
to
be interesting
sure
for you,
nice.
Given where you grew up and where you still spend most of your time. I mean, there's so much, you know, Adam on Diamond is,
I know,
15, 20 minutes up the road. There's a lot of interest. So it's interesting.
Yo, yeah. Jeff, you better believe when I build that hotel, I'm putting rooms facing the east and I'm going to sell those double the price because that's going to be the hot ticket. You know what I'm saying?
You should start your own. You should also start your own pageant while you're there. Just do a totally non-church approved pageant.
Oh, the unofficial.
That's what
pageant.
We need, man. And we've got Manti. We've got Hilkamora. We've got Mesa. I believe we need Hamilton.
That's a great idea. All right. So a couple other things going in. So we want to return to first. There are massive amounts of women at BYU right
I
now.
I don't know
Did
why
you know
you're not there. Taking advantage of this situation.
I should
Say,
have been there
that?
For Rush Week.
You're 21.
I'll go back. A historic wave of young women missionaries is flowing back to Brigham Young University. Has more return missionaries than ever on campus. Thank you very much, sister missionaries. So this is a thing. They're all over. In related news, men are leaving the church in droves. I don't understand exactly why they would be doing it at this moment when there's more women flowing like the salmon of Capistrano than ever.
Well, tell me why. What's going on?
Well, so the idea here is that men are leaving the church as they and I have a theory about this, right? Because they sort of leave at sort of timed milestones throughout life. One of them being, you know, going on a mission. The other one being as they age out of like a singles ward sort of thing. And these are big drop-offs for more men. And I'm curious, and I wonder if this holds water, but if as men grow up, like men and women, same age, you go, you turn 19. For the men, you have this big sort of cliff that you've got to be worthy to jump off of, right? You've got to have all your stuff taken care of. Sins repented, everything ship shape. And if you don't, you are sort of ostracized from the church. You, not intentionally, I don't believe, but especially how you perceive everyone, you're going to perceive that everybody thinks you're just a terrible person. Because that's what we've built in our head, that if we aren't X, Y, and Z, if we're not just right, that we are a terrible person. And that's sadly how a lot of this doctrine is taught. Well, so you hit that point, and you either, and I know people that have done this, that say it's either easier for the church to be wrong than for
that's
me to
true.
Be wrong. And then if the church is wrong, well, that's great. I just leave the church, right? And if I'm wrong, then I have to go through this repentance thing, and I can't go on a mission when I was supposed to, and I got to wait and work through it and blah, blah, blah. And so it's very big struggle. women don't necessarily have that. It, like if you struggled through high school or whatever happened, you get to sort of drift into college and continue to work on it there. You can continue to have great interactions with the gospel, with your ward, and work your way back as the Spirit prompts you and as you go. That's I guess that's really the only one that the men have that the women don't, because both men and women, as you continue to age through, I feel like that challenge is probably the same as you get to be 30 and 35 and on it goes. Yes. Right? But I wonder if that's a real thing. If like if it's we lose a lot of men right there at that moment because we sort of have that come to Jesus moment at 19 when maybe they aren't ready for it. Well, obviously they are the Lord, you know. Mission age is 18, so we're saying they are ready for it, but it's a big ask. So,
what do you think, Jeff? Yeah, I mean it's tough, and that's definitely part of why the missionary age has dropped. As I wrote about in a piece, you know, a while ago. Remember, we published a whole article about that. A real reason for the surge. I mean, yeah. A lot of it is retention. It's trying to keep them around because the kids just disappear, and I would feel awkward. I felt that pressure. I didn't go on my mission until I was 20, and. Most of it was just because I was just kind of, well, I was mostly just sitting on my butt, just not taking the initiative to get it done, just to do it. I knew I was going to go. And maybe part of that was because I felt cultural pressure, family pressure, whatever, that I knew it was something I was supposed to do and I shouldn't shirk my responsibility. And so I'm grateful that even if that was a big impetus for going, I still went because obviously that changed while I was there. And I had a wonderful mission. My mission, you know, meant everything to me. It was wonderful.
Yeah, totally.
But it's tough. It's a lot to ask of people. And that's why they say only about a third go on missions. And I think they're hoping, I don't know if that number will change or that percentage, as the age has dropped, hopefully more kids will kind of get prepped during high school and they'll be like, all right, summer's here, going on my mission. Good times.
Well, here's a big opportunity though, is these men are still there. They're just, they've lost sight of, you know, like their opportunity or their chance at succeeding in the church, quote unquote, of marrying in the church, of having a life in the church. And a lot of that stems from maybe the feeling of being constrained or of no dating options or of not being accepted. And so this is really an opportunity for the church or for people in the church to rethink how we, you know, how welcoming is our congregation? How welcoming is our doctrine? Which is no, you know, we don't need to water it down, but we need to be conscious of people that maybe don't fit the traditional Mormon mold and how they fit. And so I'm kind of excited for the next 10 years of the church as the church has shown that they are starting to pay more and more attention to this, to the more and more, you know, less Utah culture, more gospel of Jesus Christ, doctrine of Christ, that sort of stuff centric. And as that continues to evolve more and more in the church, I think this number starts to balance itself out and people start to come back and have a better experience in the church.
By the way, it's funny you mentioned otherwise. Utah culture, if I can segue into something. A bit of something I found quite amusing. Now, I imagine now you've had one of these regional state conferences before in your life.
Yeah. Is this the one
via
video?
Yeah, one of the ones when it's your state conference. Now they've actually shifted a bit again. But you have a regional conference of whatever region of the church and they broadcast it from Salt Lake. It's always the thing where you start locally, you have your prayers locally in your stake, and then they feed in the feed, then go out, and you have your closing prayer. General authorities speak, it's a good time. Now, they had one of these in Utah over the weekend, covering, you know, a couple hundred stakes across Utah. And I follow a number of different Mormon Facebook groups, some of which strictly for research purposes, and even to know what's going on, know where I need to be empathetic, lots of reasons, right? So someone published something on one of these pages, basically getting mad that Elder Ballard was speaking and apparently compared the church in Utah to a heart of the church body throughout the entire world, saying the saints in Utah help pump gospel truths through the entire world, giving the members important spiritual oxygen and essential nutrients. And then it goes as far as to say, to one say, people outside of Utah have a much better perspective, you know, I know better. And then in big caps, we need to stop calling Utah Mormons as apostles. Now, I thought this was a very funny comment because for a number of reasons. One, I did the math and only like five are actually really from Utah. So there's that of all the 12 in First Presidency right now. But people need to understand, and this wasn't the only comment about this. These regional conferences they always try to play to the crowd. This is nothing new. All of you listening around the world have probably sat in one of these conferences. I sat in one recently for the Northeast. And every speaker got up and said something like, you know, my wife and I lived in Pittsburgh. You know, I went to grad school there. We sure love the Pennsylvania countryside. So that all the Saints in Pittsburgh kind of, you know, do a little, yeah, bro, we got you too. Yeah, yeah. And we all feel great. We say, oh, they know us. They're thinking about our area. And it's great. And it's harmless and it's fine. And that's all this was with Elder Ballard, saying the Saints in Utah are a vital part of everything. And Utah's a wonderful place. And it's an amazing place. And the Saints here are great. Of course they're going to say that. It's just one of these. It's just one of these regional conferences. It baffles me that people do not pick up on this already. I don't want to be angry, huh? I'm not trying to be too ranty, but I have like a really low tolerance for it, especially when a lot of these are groups of people who are, you know, let's say more learned in a number of things that know better about a lot of church things. And it's like, that's great. So why don't you know better to know that this is a regional conference and they always play to the crowd for all of these? I've had them in California and everyone there gets up and talks about, I grew up around Irvine and it was great.
Tell them, Jeff.
Made me laugh, but at the same time, it frustrates me because I say, if you're having like a faith crisis or a problem with the church because of this, that's not something to worry about. Like, let that go. That is nothing. That is absolutely nothing.
How dare you? Jeff is clearly.
Well, it was time to bring back our rant segment. Right, it had been a number of years, and I felt it was important. Thank you.
Good work. So, in a bit of happier news, if I may. I guess it's not ever really
happy. Very happy when
the Mormon Church, the Mormon Church returned the favor. So a while ago, a Jewish congregation in Southern California loaned their synagogue, yeah, to the Mormon faith after there was, I believe it was a kitchen fire or something. They were getting remodeled. But they said, hey, we're not using it on Sunday. Why don't you guys come in and use it? It's going to be great. Mormons did the same thing for the Jews whose temple was destroyed. They're getting it fixed. And they said, hey, listen, you guys, we're not using this on Saturday. We're going to do cleaning on Friday now. You come on in. Make yourself at home. So the chance to return the favor.
Yeah,
I like this. I like this a lot. I like the idea of being more collaborative and helpful with people that are believing, good, honest, moral people, and supporting them. So good work. Good work, Mormons in Southern California. You've finally done something
ecumenism at its finest.
For once.
So now, shifting a little bit, you know, the church is kind of pushing a bit on Sabbath stuff, right? We've talked about this for a few months.
Best
day hashtag. Yeah. And all in all, I think you and I have talked about this, and we like it because it's like we're doing a positive, proactive thing about actually trying to improve what we do as saints. It's not culture stuff or, you know, trying to reach out to the broader Christian base. It's just straight up trying to get Mormons to live Sunday better. I think that's a wonderful cause.
Yeah.
So there's an interesting blog post here on LDS.org by Sean Johnson. We don't know who you are, Sean, but you laid the golden egg, son. Look at you. We don't have a lot of blogs on LDS.org. You know? So it's called Why I Stopped Phoning It In on Sundays. Now, the phone part here is very key because there seems to be something going around as if like phones are going to become anathema to the church, at least during sacrament meeting. Even going as far.
I'm sorry. Anathema?
What is
anathema?
I don't know. Just unpermissible. Anyway.
Okay.
And there's actually been some stuff about that. I've heard some things where now some buildings are putting up signs that say no cell phones, like in sacrament meeting. And building on that, I even recently in Ward Council, we watched a couple of training videos. Some of the, you know how they do general conference training of all the 70 during conference week? So they sent some of this out to stakes.
Yeah.
You've probably seen this, Al. If you haven't, I'm sure it'll come up. Talking about Sabbath observance, things we can do, stuff we talked about, families, how to strengthen families through better Sabbath observance. But there was sort of a little thread in there of like ditching the phone, but like really ditching it, at least for sacrament meeting. And that was very interesting to me. You know, that we need everything okay there, buddy? You good? You all right?
Easy,
you were looking very close
Don't
at me.
Distract.
You look concerned. I just want to make sure you were fine.
Yeah, so we got phones this is great. I'm waiting for the churches to put in, like, cell scramblers.
That'd be fun. Well, that's the question.
Or
some people are now wondering if it's not going to become like a suggestion, like, hey, you know, stay off your phones during sacrament meeting. If it's going to become more of a, there was an article on By Common Consent that equated it to the old ear piercing decree from President Hinckley, kind of along the same lines, you know, like, good Mormons, you don't need your phone during sacrament meeting. It'll be a little bit more of an official position. It's all speculation. Who knows? So there's
a
post here.
Dumb. We do a lot of work to help people be able to read the scriptures on their phone. I mean, that's sort of the conundrum, is we hide behind this. Like, I'm not playing 2048 on my phone. I'm playing Gospel Principles Manual. That's what I'm really reading. And you're always just double tap on the home screen away.
Which is,
and getting right back into it.
It's good to look at church stuff. I mean, I get the problem with it. I mean, I sit there and it does detract from it. If you're spending your time just like texting people and checking sports scores and doing whatever else, like, what are you there for?
Jeff, you used to text people for your ward mission calling, right? You guys would text all
the time. Oh, I forgot about that, huh? Yeah, that's back when you lived with me, wasn't it? But we would text because we'd be looking out for less active people.
I know. We've all got great reasons, Jeff. I'm not texting because I'm bored. I'm Facebooking for Jesus.
I'm sure you are.
That's what I'm doing.
So I do my best. I'm not perfect either. But I try to I usually use my phone to read some scriptures during sacrament meeting. But that's it. I put it away. I don't like to sit there and mess with it and detract.
I'm saying I think giving instruction on how to get more out of sacrament meeting, that is the first place I'd start. Leave your phone at home. Leave it in the car. Come with a physical set of scriptures to meander through. You will get more out of sacrament meeting. Will they ever come out and say, man, I hope not. We don't need one more thing to be
maybe not to the extent
about
we were saying before, but this post does talk about how we need to really shut it down and let the Sabbath be different. Going as far as to give us screensavers we can use if we want to change our phone wallpaper on Sunday.
We don't.
And have
that's
shape
a
of the
idea.
Cell phone looking at you that says, I'm not in charge.
That
the phone is
a
not
dumb
in charge.
Idea.
It might be a dumb idea, but clearly the brethren are concerned.
Jeff, I prefer my photo I took myself of the cliffs of Moher in Ireland than I do of a picture of a computer saying,
well, I agree.
You are
my
not
My phone
in charge.
Has a beautiful background of Glacier National Park. A photo I took of it.
Hey, so I got an email. I got an email last week from a guy that had listened to the show and was concerned with the idea that I would have a bakery that sold.
Ah, yes, we talked about this.
Coffee.
Okay.
I thought it was interesting. He brought up a couple of good points that I thought were worth discussion.
Let's close out on this.
You know, he talked about the idea of selling something that would make somebody unworthy to enter the temple, and sort of a how could I be okay with that, sort of approach to it, saying you know, let's say I was a bishop at some point, and somebody said, oh, I have to stay away from the bishop's bakery because that temptation is too much. He is choosing money over goodness, and that temptation would keep me out of the temple. How could I do that? Thought it was an interesting angle, because I've looked at this from a number of angles. You know, obviously I've thought long and hard about what we're doing here, but I wanted to open it up, Jeff. Any thoughts on this? We were pretty cut and dry on it on, like, yeah, I mean, this is a thing.
You were
it's
more
kind
cut
of an odd
dry
thing for
about
a
it. I understand.
Well,
I completely
sure
understand the misgivings that writer had.
What, go on. What are your misgivings?
Exactly
what would,
that.
What should
though,
be some
exactly
angles
that.
I
well,
consider?
It's two different perspectives. You have the perspective, and I'm not knocking anybody for it. You have the perspective of, I'm running a business. It doesn't matter what I sell because I'm not the one forcing people to buy certain things. That's their choice, and that's not my job. Like, you know, if I own a grocery store, is it my responsibility to police everybody about alcohol? No, I'm just selling stuff. But on the flip side of it, you can say, but you're an active Latter-day Saint. You are called to preach repentance and righteousness to people. And so what good are you doing if you are allowing the proliferation of product or things that contravene the Lord's plan for us? Both points of view, I think, have their merits and are worth thinking about.
Well, I think the thing that I struggle with is I always, I do, meander into the extremes, right? So if it's okay to sell coffee, or you know, I've worked for grocers for a long time that sell beer, but in Utah they have ones that'll sell alcohol, but they're closed on Sunday.
Right.
Right. Or they're open on Sunday, but they don't sell alcohol.
Well, let's take it to a bigger extreme. Let's say it's law of the land stuff. Okay. Right. Because we believe
I'm in Nevada running a whorehouse.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the extent.
Or I've got a corner market and I'm selling porno mags.
Yeah. Which is legal, which is not, you're not forcing it on anyone. Now we don't rank. I mean, we believe chastity is, you could arguably more important than drinking coffee,
I do kind of rank. I don't know if this is right or not, but like
I would
do word of wisdom, or I would sell things that compromise somebody's word of wisdom. And the thing that I struggle with is that there's an element of choice to it, right? Like
one,
I'm not the proprietor. There's somebody else in there managing and running that. I'm giving. You know,
You are profiting off of
absolutely
sin.
Absolutely. And my option is to either A, build a successful business that operates, creates jobs, hopefully creates meaningful jobs that are worth it for people.
Are
to move
the meaningful
to the
jobs building the Lord's kingdom, though? Are they related to building the Lord's kingdom?
Sure. Having commerce that you could go and live in an area. Absolutely. Especially in my area. Or you choose to not have a business, right? Because running it on a postum latte or something ridiculous like that, you're not ever going to make enough money to have a bakery. So I get to make those two choices. And then am I choosing the love of money, or am I choosing money over this by choosing to have a business that exists?
A business that runs against our own beliefs.
Uh-huh.
Are you guys open on? Well, here's no. Are you open on Sundays? Are the shops?
We're not
open
on Sundays. No, we close everything on Sundays.
There you go.
But I mean,
there's no demand, though. I bet.
Another example thrown out in the email was Chick-fil-A. I'm sure Chick-fil-A seized the opportunity to make more money on Sunday, but by closing on Sunday, you know, they have this whole thing, and I'm like, oh, that's great. You know, I'm all for that. I'm all for that because that benefits my employees, but. But, you know, like selling coffee or even selling sugar, copious amounts of sugar, that is also against the word of wisdom.
Well, let's take it more drastically, though. Would you sell cigarettes?
So my uncle ran a grocery store when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And he brought lotto tickets and cigarettes in because people were asking for them. You know, and so when you're running a business, when you're running a big empire, you know, where you have stores in every city, it's maybe a little bit different. But when you're running in a small community and everybody's coming in asking for this thing, you say, yeah, I'll sell you that thing, because if you don't, somebody else does, and that moves your business away.
But where is your faith, Al? You're thinking too much in dollar signs. Think, where is your faith?
No, I absolutely do. Much like the sister, that the old legend of the sister missionaries who were driving home, ran out of gas, and they filled their tank with water and prayed that it would turn into gas.
This is exactly like that. It's the same story.
Why not just have faith that magically business principles would be applied that do not exist? Now, my thing, like, I would be fine selling, I think I would be fine selling cigarettes if I were in a community where everybody wanted them. Should I not be?
I probably would not be. I would probably hold my ground and say, you know what? I don't need to be part of the problem.
What about like a wine store?
I think a wine store would be a little bit dodgier. It's one thing if you're running a supermarket and alcohol is one of the things sold there, along with a number of other sundries. But if you're just owning what is specifically just an ABC store, you know, like what? Why? That's
what it's different than a bar, right? This is bottled wine. It's sort of collectors come in and grab it, or fancy.
So you're gonna
start
a BevMo franchise, is what you're telling me.
I'm asking. I'm just saying. What if? Because these are all things that I've like considered
right.
as options. And
this is your homework.
Fine with this.
I want you to email your steak president and talk and ask him these questions. Not in a way that you're struggling, but say, you know, we talked about. He knows you do the show. Say, we were talking about this. I've been wondering about it. What is your take?
My stake president is not an authority.
But he's an authority over you. He has priest and
sure,
keys over you.
Sure. Yeah, but But he's not going to come to me and tell me how to run my business, Jeff, unless I'm doing something against.
And maybe he might help you feel the ethos of the church. Who knows?
I love this because it's a great conversation. I love this because I've never been in a situation where I've had to actually digest or think through a lot of these things. And so I get to just say, what if?
Now, speaking of faith, everybody, I would like you to exercise your faith and like us on Facebook and leave us a review on iTunes. And as they say, plant your faith seed if we were televangelists of Twitter. I don't know what I'm saying, but,
They do say that.
Do all
and also
social media.
Email us. contact@thisweekinmormons.com. thisweekinmormons.com for your comments. And I hope that this week my audio is clean. I do this thing for you.
If it's bad, we might just scuttle it all together. And instead, I will do a live performance of the greatest hits of 2 years later. And that will be the entire episode.
Oh, my gosh. Lindsay, why did you break up with me?
I will play Why Did You Break Up With Me, Lindsay Parker. And I kid you not, four different keys. Going up a half step every time. That'd be amazing.
All right, Jeff. Hey, man. Thanks a lot for being flexible with me this week. It's great to be here with you.
No problem. Folks, thank you for tuning in and spending time with us. We appreciate you doing so and hope you'll join us again next week. So I will speak for Al and say, be well, be holy, be happy. And thank you for listening to This Week in Mormons.
Don't do anything.
Fare thee well, young sir.